all pain comes from feeling like one or more of your six needs is not being met. I'll give you a clue in a relationship. When a person feels like they're less important than anything else, the relationship has challenges. More important, if work's more important than that person, it's gonna have challenges. If another human being seems more important, then you got some real challenges. Because human beings totally understand that you can love more than one person at one time, right? So we human beings, out of our need for significance, want that oneness, and if something starts to affect that, then we feel an amazing sense of pain and loss. Well, let me tell you a little story for a second. I have a good friend, and he decided he was gonna move his mom and dad, who had been living in the same home for 50 years, as a surprise. They'd been on vacation, and while on vacation, he bought them a home and decided he and his sister were gonna move them as a surprise, okay? It's coming from a very loving place, right? So he didn't realize how much you can collect in 50 years, and he rented a huge U-Haul truck. And when he took that U-Haul truck, he went out, and he and his sister started filling it up, and it took them almost a day, and by the end of the day, a snowstorm came into Washington, D.C. while they're loading it up. So now he's freaking. The roads are gonna be slick. He's driving a giant U-Haul. Worse, the U-Haul, as big as it was, wouldn't take everything. So he and his sister had to go get a connector, you know, those trailers that connects to a U-Haul on top of it. And it's snowing, and they're loading all the stuff up, and their parents don't even know they're moving, right? And so now he's freaked out. He's wondering if they're gonna be upset about moving. This was a great idea, but now everything's loaded up and it's time to go. And he's worried about the weather. He's worried about so many things. So he says to his sister, he's already stressed. He's in a stress state. Listen, go back to the back of the trailer. I'm gonna go over here. I'm gonna push on the brakes. Make sure the extension trailer, because that's what people will see, that those lights show I'm braking. Because can you imagine? If the big trailer lights come on, but the extension trailer doesn't, someone will slam right in the back of him. So he said, okay. She says, okay. She goes back there. He goes, okay, I'm pushing. She says, it's working. It's working. It's working. He said, great. Goes, okay, now I'm gonna do the turn signals. She says, it's working. Oh, now it's not. Oh, it's working. Now it's not. It's working. Now it's not. He comes back to her and says, what is the matter with you? That's the turn signal. That's how you know when it's working, when it's not. When it goes on and off, that's how you know it's working. Maybe when you say, God, it was working, and oh, now it's not. Maybe when you say now it's not, is it's working because you're aware of what you're doing, and now you can change it. See, if you think it's working as it's always perfect, then what you'd have is a brake light. But what you really want is a life. And a life has many seasons. And you know, a life that's all summer, you'd burn out on. All winter, you'd freeze to death. I mean, God is really cool. He figured out after winter to put spring. I mean, wouldn't you put it there? I mean, he figures after night, daytime. Cool deal. That's a really cool deal, right? And after pain is always a new opportunity. I mean, you can count on it. Just like the day will follow the night. The night is not forever. And no problem is eternal. Only your soul is. So maybe you need to remember that part when you start thinking something's there, right? And maybe God's denials are not really denials at all. Maybe they're just God's delays. I spoke in a prison once, and these guys had been in the prison, and they were all in high security prison. And most of them had been murdered somebody or raped someone. Some of them had raped family members. And I went in to go to this prison, and I went to address these guys, and I knew all their histories. I read them all. But I also knew that this particular group of guys had worked unbelievably hard to somehow transform their lives. And so I decided one day to surprise them, because some of them have written letters to me because they had listened to my tapes and work and really made some nice changes. One man said that although he had 52 more years to serve, that he really felt like he'd been living in a pity pot and feeling sorry for himself, but that he really got from my tapes who he really is as a man, and that he really truly has never taken responsibility, and he feels better than he ever has. He feels more free than when he was outside the walls because he knows who he is now, and he's become who he really wants to be and so forth. So I came and surprised these guys. And I talked to the warden before I came in, and I said, and I really would like to help them. I think one is just to acknowledge them as men and tell them, even though what they did, I know human beings are not their behavior, and they're going to have to pay the price for that behavior. So I tend to separate the person from the behavior. And I said, what do you think is the toughest thing for these guys to deal with? And he said, Tony, you know what it really is? It's these men, when they finally get to see their wives or girlfriends, which is rare, and most of them are in for 10, 20, 30, 40 years. He said the humiliation they go through because they're strip searched and cavity searched, without going through any details there, I think you get the picture, before they get to go in to see their families and again coming out. And the sense of absolute horror, the sense of violation, the sense of humiliation they feel shows up when they then sit down with their family. And what happens is very often they have fights. The one time they're with their girlfriend or family members and they come back and they do it even more. He said, could you help them with that? I was like, okay, how do you do this, right? So I went in to talk to him, and I talked to him, and when I walked in, I knew them all by name, and when I walked in, they thought they were gonna hear a martial arts speaker, and I walked in, and they were really blown away. And I called him in, and I talked to him, and I said, I come by to see you, man. I said, because I want you to know, I know that you're a rapist, I know that you've murdered, but I also know that's not who you are now in your life. I know you're gonna have to pay that price. I said, I came here to honor you because of the letters I've received from you and because of who you are becoming as men. And I said, so I'm not here to teach you, I'm here to honor you, and just in some small way, let you know I really care about you. No one had ever done that for most of them in their entire life. That's one of the reasons they did the things they did, because they never ever felt honored or loved or respected by anyone. So they tried to demand that honor or respect by just doing anything they could to feel significant. And most of them picked a really bad way. And so I said, and while I'm here, I thought maybe I could help you with a few things. I said, some of you right now are more free than people outside here, because I know people, what you guys deal with is so intense. I know people, man, they freak out when, you know, they go to Jack in the Box and they forget their damn pickles on the thing. And they just think their life is really a mess. And I said, I know you have bigger challenges when you go to see your sisters and brothers and kids and wives. And the whole room tightened up. And I said, I know many of you feel humiliated and you feel all these feelings. And I said, you know what, though? I said, if I were you, I wouldn't feel that. I mean, you know what you really got to do? You got to feel bad for the guy that's got to search the cabin. You should go, yeah, bud, check it out. And I got them laughing hysterically. I went on for this about 20 minutes full tilt, right? And I said, you're not the one who asked it. Can you imagine if somebody asked that guard what he does for a living? What does he got to say? I mean, I'm sure he doesn't tell anybody what he really does. I said, you're humiliated. Think about him. And I got them laughing and laughing and laughing. I said, so next time, make the guard miserable. So that was the next stage to go from being able to handle it. So now they're thinking they're going to have fun with it. But then the next final stage for those people that keep raising their standards and like move to their virtues instead of their vices, as I said, now look around, some of the guards in the room, and they kind of laughed when I was talking about it, and some were there, and they were, so look at these guys. I said, people just like you. I don't think they look forward to that. I said, maybe the next time you can do is maybe feel bad for them. Maybe care about how they feel. And you watch this shift happen. Most people live in hypnosis. I'm a dehypnotist. Most people are hypnotized into thinking that life is one way. They locked it in their mind. You tell them a story, people go into a trance as they listen to the story, and their brain begins to make new associations. So that's how you get the shift to occur. So how many are gonna make this call? Say aye. Here's the second call I want you to make. The second call is not painful. You'll wanna make this call. How many of you out there have had an experience where there was somebody who you're really close to, somebody you really appreciated, really enjoyed, really loved, and you didn't have an argument, you didn't have something negative happen, you just got so busy, and they got so busy, and you're like in different places, and you didn't call for a while, and the more you didn't call, the weirder it felt not to call, and then since you didn't call for so long, it really felt weird not to call, and now you haven't called forever, and you kind of, like the commercial says, kind of drifted away, and it wasn't because you're upset with them at all. How many of you have someone like that somewhere in your life? Raise your hand, say I. That's your second call. What are you gonna do? Call them up, acknowledge who you are, do the same thing, acknowledge what happened. Tell them the truth. Say, listen, you know, I'm calling. I'm sure you don't have any time to talk right now. We don't need to. I'm just calling to tell you one thing. And that is that I think about you a lot. That, you know, I haven't talked to you in so long that after a while, I'm telling the truth. I didn't call for a while, you didn't call. I was busy, you were busy. and then felt weird to call. So the reason I'm calling is so it doesn't feel weird to call in the future, right? I'm just calling to tell you I love you, and I'm so thrilled that you're part of my team. And even if we don't talk for 2 years, I always care about you. And if you ever want to talk, I'm always here. I know you probably don't have any time, so I just want to say thanks. Have a nice night. That person, I guarantee, will stop you. I say, oh, no, I'm so glad you called. And what it'll do is it'll take a part of your life, like one thing you can finally put behind you, this thing you can put back in front of you, and reconnect with it. And I think you're going to find that it'll have a really wonderful processional effect. Like, you know, when you drop the rock in the water, it doesn't stop there when it hits the water. It has this neat little wave effect on your life. Same thing happens when you reconnect with someone you really consider to be a friend. It has an impact on things that you normally wouldn't measure in that area. How many want to make this call also? Say I. And here's the third assignment. The third assignment in team building is I want you to make a list of all the key team members of your life. And what I mean by that is anyone you consider to be part of your team. Team can be intimate loved ones, it can be family or friends. Team can be those people you work with who you really, really care about. But I'm talking about your close inner team of people. The people that you care about, the people who have their feelings about you as influence over you. The people that you would be driven to give to and to serve, and therefore would need to grow and contribute in some way. And what I'm going to ask you to do is I want you to write next to each person's name some unique way you're going to let them know you care about them in the next 30 to 45 days. Some unique way. Because what we all assume is that everybody knows we love them, but we don't. People don't. They forget. Or if they haven't experienced it in a certain way, they don't know. So I want you to do it unique way.